I'm Richard Fieldhouse.
And I'm Sarah Chambers.
And we're reviewing the latest edition of the Sessional GP magazine, which is coming out today, February the 9th, 2018. Some 17 pages. And Sarah and I have both been having a good look at it today, just before it's been going live. And Sarah, you've actually written the first article, the introduction. We've called this Pension Paradox. What's brought you to write that?
That's right. So there's been there's been a growing awareness as we approach the end of the pension year. There's been a growing awareness of the concept of annualisation and having to complete, if you're a type 2 practitioner, having to complete type 2 self-assessment forms. And it's just struck me, I mean, we talk about annualisation and what it is and when it applies and how it's worked out in another article or blog that we published last week.
And there's a link straight through to that.
That's right. So if you want to know more, you can link from the article. And again, within the article, that I also link to other articles from the BMA and other places about annualisation if you want to know more about it. But it's depressed a lot of people. And it struck me that if you were the NHS pension agency, what they've done with annualisation in the 2015 pension scheme is it applies across the whole NHS workforce. So it's not just GPs that are being singled out here. So in a way that there's a sort of sense of equality, and they're doing the job that we're all having to do in Western societies, which is cope with an ageing population. And I think the tagline for the 2015 scheme is securing tomorrow today. So they have to find ways to decrease benefits and increase contributions.
To fund it, yeah.
And you know, so that's painful, but it has to be done. And it has to be said that it's still the NHS pension scheme, from everything that we know from our independent financial advisor colleagues, is still of great value. In fact, handily enough, later on in this edition of the magazine, we actually have a piece, yes, from our financial advisor colleagues, Legal and Medical, doing direct comparisons of the NHS pension scheme with private pension schemes and other long-term investments. And it's stunning, you know, to get the same benefit, even if you were affected by annualisation and ended up having to pay employee contributions on the top tier, you're still a lot better off the benefits you're getting from your NHS pension. But, you know, but nonetheless, the problem I just thought is there's this person in the pension scheme thinking they've done a really good job in securing the NHS pensions. It's just, there's so many other unfortunate things happening in the GP workforce, and there's a particular little glitch in the annualisation rules around the breaks in service and what counts as a break in service. And it particularly falls on GPs, flexible GPs, who might be finishing or starting a different role within a pension year, so going from being a locum to a type 1 or type 2 practitioners, which are partners or salaried GPs.
So type 1 is a partner, type 2 is a salaried GP.
And these people could find that from their minds, they might have been working full-time all year, but this is sort of counted as a break in service.
By doing extra locum work.
By doing extra locum work or changing role within a pension year. So you're inadvertently, you might have put yourself at...
Well, this is stuff that CCGs, in our experience, certainly as well, and why not, but are asking their GPs to do more sessions or to do out of hours and all these kind of things as well. So we are being asked to do it.
Yeah, we've heard from people, from members saying, you know, do you think I'll be affected? And, you know, actually, if I'd known that taking on this, I wouldn't have taken the job if I'd known that I was going to be affected by annualisation. So there's this sort of... There's a lot going on with GPs, and it has a feeling of that it's an unforeseen consequence that it might it risks reducing people that wanting to take up new posts during a pension year, maybe delaying entering the workforce if they're a newly qualified GP to time it with a pension year, or to avoid doing sporadic locum work, because if you have a gap a gap longer than 3 months between a low compost, then you're going to end up having to annualise. So it's an unfortunate spin-off, and combined with everything else that's going on in the lives of grassroots GPs around a sense of, you know, rising risk and rising litigation and uncertainty about indemnity costs and just a general workload crisis. It's just, do we really need this? Somebody, when they're designing this stuff, somebody needs to start thinking about a whole joined up approach as to what it's like to be a GP at the moment. And I certainly think that we'd be interested to raise how we can look at the break in service rules and see how they, what effect they're having.
But the sheer, reading your article, the sheer mind-blowing point that you've not mentioned yet, which I just think almost blows this into being utterly the realm of the ridiculous, and the already, I think what you're saying, this is a very cack-handed way of trying to get more money into pensions, pension scheme, where actually it's going to probably make more GPs leave the profession and not contribute to the scheme these ramifications. But the thing you mentioned as well is this ongoing saga of us as GP locums is that we don't get the death in service benefit. Now, the way this annualisation works is it annualises everything up as if you were working 365 days a year. Whereas the death in service benefit is actually the opposite to that. It'll only cover you whilst you're actually at work, or you've got some session bookings all in a discrete package. So it's absolutely mind-blowingly badly applied, and they've not thought this through. And it's an extra kick in the ribs, I think, if you're a GP locum with the whole death in service thing as well.
Well, I was trying to soften the blow, and I was trying to make it seem, oh, you know, somebody's somewhere trying to do a good job. But yes, when you put it like that, everything else that's going on, that's a killer point.
So, moving on. Next page is an advert from one of our many, many long-term advertisers, Trust Locums. I think they've been advertising with us for a good 5 or 6 years, if not a lot longer. The next is Liz Densley. She's written an article on how to start planning now for next year's tax. Bearing in mind, many of us have all just finished at the last minute working with our accountants or even doing our tax online ourselves. I think we both fit into the former group there. But there's a few more months to go now till April the 5th, April the 6th, 2018. And Liz's article here goes about what things we can start doing now, today, here in February, before the end of this April, which will actually have an impact on next year's tax, and talks about how to reduce the burden of capital gains tax. If we're planning on buying updating our computers or iPads, whether we should do this year or next year, about child benefit, about getting marriage allowance and everything, all in there. So that's really worth a good sit down and a read through. It talks about handing on money to your children and to other people to avoid inheritance tax. Again, another thing, good thing to talk about with a cup of coffee with your loved ones. So that's a good read, some really good advice there from Liz. And of course it changes, Liz often gives this sort of advice, but of course the environment is constantly changing with tax law. And so this is a very good updated article.
And so if you have any money left over after annualisation, might be able to... think about how you plan it tax efficiently.
There's an advert from the Independent Doctors Federation. This is on Monday, the 18th of June, in the afternoon. They're hosting a free educational event in London. It's a good 3 or 4 hours of education at the Royal Society of Medicine. So if you're spending the weekend in London, stay on an extra night and go along to that on Monday afternoon. I saw last year's agenda and it was absolutely packed. It looked more like a one of these dating things, speed dating things, almost really? An educational okay. speed dating type thing. But it was packed with stuff.
And they say they've got five different clinical specialties attending, and they mentioned that over 80% of last year's conference delegates said they would attend again.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're very keen to reach out to sessional GPs and get sessional GPs involved. And if you're interested in doing private medicine, then of course it's a great place to network as well. And sorry, you mentioned this in your first article, so we'll go through this briefly, but this is about whether the property market is a good alternative to NHS pensions. And in this article, Nigel Farrow from Legal & Medical talks about, he actually gives three really good hypothetical situations, whether you're 25 years old, 35 or 45, and compares how much you would be putting into your NHS pension scheme, mm-hmm. and actually what you've been
doing. I absolutely think this one's worth a read. It's page 9 in Money Matters in the magazine. And it's the three case studies, if you're feeling a bit gloomy or a bit angry about annualisation, reading the case studies will give you a little bit of perspective anyway on how valuable the NHS pension scheme is.
Yeah. You mentioned page 9. It's in page 9 on the PDF downloadable version.
Oh, I
so
see.
Some people like to print it out.
Yes.
On the iPad version, it's page 6, but that's
okay.
Just to make the point, there are two versions, and you can get them both, obviously, from the NESGP website/magazine.
Thank you.
And another advert here from Shetland, from NHS Shetland. Get a quick read of this. It looks very exciting, actually, doesn't
it? I'm intrigued.
Yeah, otters, seals, some really interesting sounding general practice. They're working on single-handed practices with 720 patients to island practices of 1,100 patients. They've got a very highly rated teaching practice there.
Guess how many people live in Shetland?
Ooh.
Well, this advert tells you.
Oh, okay.
You're looking after the health needs of some 23,000 people spread across 15 islands. Not you personally. I think they're after several GPs. But the description of the job sounds quite lovely.
Yeah. 23,000. That's a really small town. It's a really small town.
So 15-minute appointments are standard. Lovely wildlife.
Well, I think you sold it to me on just the 15-minute appointments there.
Yeah.
And the other side of the world, next article is from Emma Cook from Transition Medical. You know, Emma approached NESGP about advertising in the magazine, so I've got in touch with her because we've been having some great articles from Lindsay Moran, who's still on maternity leave, and Lindsay gives a really good personal context of working overseas, and we've asked Emma as well to write about more her experience with having run Transition Medical now for a good few years, managing to successfully place some 100 plus GPs from the UK in an island into Australia and New Zealand, and I think some South Africa as well, practices. And this article is about what has, on the one hand, encouraged people to, you know, the reasons they've wanted to leave general practice in Great Britain and also what they've actually loved about working overseas. And there's a lovely little vignette there from someone who has moved over there with his young family and is actually now laying the concrete foundations for his house and is applying for a visa. And we're hoping for Emma to get more of these articles, which hopefully should be, I hope it become quite a good resource if this is anything you're ever considering. And we're going to, again, make sure these are balanced and there are plus sides, there are also downsides to moving overseas as well. And Emma can help us with her expertise and also what she's learnt as well, because I bet it can't be straightforward moving doctors moving from one end of the world to the other with families in tow.
Mm.
An article from our friends at Palette Medical.
An advert, I should say, yes.
The paramedical team. And then Rachel from the NPS has put together this on the GDPR. Very exciting.
Yes, which stands for the General Data Protection Regulation, which is causing great excitement. It comes into force 25th of May 2018, and probably for us as sessional GPs, if you're a locum, there are a few things to bear in mind, but it's just good to have a general awareness of this rather major piece of legislation and the environment that we're all working in.
And basically the data protection law, but on steroids, and it's coming in the end of May, and the basically really severe penalties for the data controllers who look after data, in this case practice managers, about if data, if information, confidential information, private information, identified information is lost or stolen or misused. And us as consumers will be getting lots of, I'm sure, lots and lots of emails from our banks and all sorts of people, even from us at NESGP soon, too, because one thing is when you're opting in for something, you actually have to physically opt in. You can't be automatically opted in. And so there's this, when you mention excitement, certainly lots of businesses and companies are having to spend a lot of time sifting through the legislation around this, because it's actually not that clear.
I mean, it's generally about protecting data subjects. That's you and I on the street, isn't it? From big companies, and the idea being that it's a lot hotter on controlling people only holding precisely what they need for the shortest time possible. You having to opt into that, and companies really, or organisations really, having to be very hot about reporting any breaches and being held accountable if they're not doing any of the above. And there is a final segment in Rachel's article which just pertains to sessional GPs and, you know, what this might mean for us if we're following up a patient's progress after we've seen them as a locum. And there's a lot of coverage that we can get about looking up a patient's record when we return to a practice, from just the concept of implied consent. You know, you're doing this in order to perhaps further their management or further your learning, and there's the GMC's implied consent. But there might be some extra, just some things to think about if you're actually having to contact the practice from afar. And elsewhere on the NHGP website, actually, we've got quite a good article that Rachel previously wrote on that. So not a great, called How to Safely Follow Patients. So not a vast change perhaps for our daily practice if you're a locum, but good to have the sense of the awareness of the environment that you're working in.
And we must feed this article through into our appraisal aid section, because in section 5 of our appraisal aid, which is on patient feedback, we've already got a couple of FAQs on how to follow up patients. So we could feed that into this, couldn't we?
Very
straightforward to do. And an actual advert as well from Transition Medical on the next page with some contact details. And then our mate Kate has written a great article, Sugar, the Uncoated Truth. And this is, Kate always begins with a personal story about in this case, on feeding a family, as we've all done, on delicious bagels, and then discovering the sugar content.
Yes.
That horror moment, which we can all remember. My moment was on Victoria train station platform, actually.
What did you have a moment? What happened?
When a bagel made.
Oh, a bagel, okay. What, when you saw the packaging?
Partly to do with the packaging, partly the fact I was asked what of 5 different types of salmon I'd like in my bagel. How many different types of cream?
Yes, carry, let's carry on with the article. I found this article from Kate Little to be a part physiology lesson, but also part psychology. And the physiology I learnt was around the evils of fructose, the particular metabolism of fructose being that it's only metabolised in the liver, whereas your glucose is metabolised everywhere. So if there is an overload of fructose, the poor liver has to contain this, and when it runs out of glycogen storage, it puts it into fat, and then you get your fatty liver, and then you get your insulin resistance, and then you get, you know, everything that follows from that. So it's this particularly toxic, this high fructose corn syrup, and that's become very prevalent in the United States and has been swapped in as a cheaper sweetener to things like your sodas and your fizzy drinks. So Kate's got lots of really, that was an education for me. And then just some great references and some great points about habit, which you...
Yeah, well, because, I mean, for it having been Christmas, I've for the first time in my life entered into a little bit of a low-carb diet thing to try it out. And it's been really good, but it's all about breaking that habit, really, of eating biscuits or cakes when biscuits or cakes are around. And I've always considered myself a very good healthy eater, but actually when I make the effort to really, really make that concrete decision, it's actually been really quite difficult to do, and it's been a big awareness. Mm. And I just, you know, the habit getting control of the habit is probably the most important thing.
I think the other thing that came out of Kate's article, if we're trying to help patients reduce sugar, is just the awareness. I mean, we might be telling you something you already know, but I was surprised by the article to find that sugar is pretty ubiquitous in ready-made foods, even savoury foods that you wouldn't expect it to find it in. So the old adage about getting back to home cooking, to food that you recognise, is really important. And this is just so key, and we're so up against a very well-funded food industry here, but it's so key. I mean, some researchers, Kate mentioned in the article, some researchers are even saying things like the things that you wouldn't necessarily think of as being related to sugar, you know, that Alzheimer's should be considered as type 3 diabetes, instance. Yeah. There's not a single part of the health service and our you know, future well-being as a country that sugar doesn't affect, I don't think. So thank you to Kate. It's a real education.
The next article is a beautiful oil painting, and again from Claire de Mortimer Griffin from Glasgow. She actually works in Glasgow and I think also Yorkshire as well. But it's a prolific painter, and not only does Claire do our front cover for the magazine, also so prolific that we have paintings inside as well. And if anybody out there has got any paintings or sculptures or poetry or anything that they would like us to publish, we'd love to.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's really nice, Claire. Thank you.
And Judith has done a really interesting article, I think, on mole whacking.
Can I say, I always start the magazine at the back to read Judith, because I always find it so informative and entertaining. Yeah. And it's another good one.
It is. It's about, and Judith, this is about the point of... if it's short-term fixes, if there's a mole in your garden, just giving a whack on the head won't solve the problem. It'll just plaster over the cracks. And Judith starts off with the whole WannaCry disaster that affected so many practices and hospitals in the NHS because of just poor investment and maintenance of something as basic as computer systems that. With using really outdated Microsoft XP and not patching it properly, and all that led to, but also goes into the infrastructure of the NHS and the buildings and property, but also, I mean, we've talked about this earlier on, investing in the workforce as well, and things just start to crack, and it almost comes to a point where they just can't be fixed anymore. And so, again, a really good article. And, of course, we must mention that Judith has now put together all her articles ever published in the NESGP magazine and published them into a book, which you can buy on Amazon. And if you look, type on Amazon, Judith Harvey Perspectives, and you can buy it in both paperback, which is £9.99, or in Kindle version, which is about £6.99. And I'd highly recommend that. Next is an advert for Locumdec, last but not least, which is, we've just spent the last few days launching some really cool updates to the, particularly the bookkeeping system, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. So yes, yeah, so he tucked away, literally hot off the press yesterday. We've added, this is a combination of something we were going to do anyway, but very much shaped in how we did it and brought to the fore by members feeding back and saying, can we have this now, please, can we have this? So we've added another section. I mean, Locum, that the bookkeeper is automatically recording all your numbers and your session fees and your pension contributions, etc., from work that you're booking through Locum Deck, either from bookings that you're adding yourself or bookings that are being instantly booked, that, you know, with practices where you've set them up to instant book you. All of that's being automatically recorded. But you can now, there is another section called Other Fees. So if you're doing any other kinds of work or getting income from other kinds of work, you know, like cremation fees, like lecture fees, that you want to manually add, so it's all being recorded in one place, there's another section for that now. And also each of the sections getting ready for 1st of April, start of a new tax year, so you can all have complete tax year records that you can send and share with your accountants. There's exportable spreadsheets now of all of the information that you can send off to your accountant, get them to interrogate it, and there's a summary report PDF that you can produce as well, which has an overview summary, and then you can back that up with all of the richer information from your spreadsheets.
It looks really incredible, and already it's been live less than 24 hours and we've already had some amazing feedback, even one from a locum who's husband is an accountant, so really do check it out and really think of it as the bookkeeper as almost like a virtual assistant. We should rename it into someone's name or something, maybe. You can really, yes, as you say, interrogate and do reports.
There's obviously the I forgot to mention the mileage tab as well. Which is recording all of your mileage automatically from your calendar, but you can manually add mileage, and that's got an exportable spreadsheet for your mileage log as well.
Because mileage is handled differently for your travel to and from your home to your practice.
It depends on whether it's a regular practice. The advice from the accountants was that it depends if it's a regular practice. If it's considered a regular workplace, which will differ depending on tax law, pension law, employment law, they've all these different definitions. But if for certain sporadic engagements, you can claim the travel, the mileage.
And bookkeeper helps separate those.
Yes, things. Bookkeeper categorises it so you and your accountant can just quickly skim through and claim the correct mileage. And you probably find you can claim more than you thought for.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And last but not least, Louise has done this, but one of another guideline summaries up. And this one is faltering growth in children. A new nice guideline. And although Louise says a lot of this is familiar, it's great having this up there. They're in the magazine. It'll soon be on the website as well. But there's actually lots of factual information there. You reference material you can go and have a look at.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. I learnt a lot. I learnt a lot by reading it. And it's presented in Louise's characteristic, succinct, clear style, really. I always had as a rule of thumb, for instance, you know, when do you worry about faltering growth? And I'd always had a rough guide in my mind. I don't know, that from years ago, from teaching years ago, that, oh, it's if the weight drops by two centiles. And Louise points out that actually the centile drops are dependent on the birth weight. So depending on where the birth weight is will depend on when you start to become concerned, which is probably an obvious point now, I think of it, but a really good one.
And also when to follow up as well. Again, that's age dependent, whether it's daily or weekly or monthly.
Yeah, so obviously the younger and smaller the child is, the more frequent the follow-up. Yeah. There's something else around, again, touching on our sugary drink things, that children having lots of high energy, rich milks and high energy drinks will be affecting the appetite. I'm sure I've seen children like that where you know, mum swears blind, they hardly eat anything, they look a good size and they're carrying a bottle of something and you think, hang on.
Yeah. And the point is made to avoid too much milk or energy-rich drinks in there.
But it's a really good run-through.
Yeah.
I recommend it.
And that's it. That's the latest magazine. Hope you've found this useful. If you want to leave any feedback or comments about the magazine, as always, please do. And also do take a look at the NESGP discussion forum. You'll see it at the bottom of the page whenever you log in. And we've spruced that up. We've got it looking much neater. We're just about to introduce a fully functioning facility for you to actually receive alerts when someone has replied to your post, amongst some other things, and edit your posts as well if you've made any typos and have put links in there and everything else like that. So that's coming on really well. Please take a look. And thanks again for listening.
Thank you.